shots in the pool. That is not cool. I need the tool. Take me to school. Feet first into this league. Me first. That cannot be. Under the underdog Monica G. Feeling a whole lot better suddenly. I get in, winning, winning again. You're 1-2 in the bag and I'm going for 3. That is the beat down. Got it the best, so I keep now. Y'all treading water for weeks now. Now I'm the shark, so I eat.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Dynasty Underdog. Billy Beeman here. You can catch me on Twitter at WillieBeemanFF. Uriah with me, as always. You can catch him on Twitter at Uriah Dawkins. And as I said last week, we wanted to break things up a little bit around here. We've been really digging into the prospects, doing prospect profiles every week. And I thought, what better way to do that than talk about something we don't often talk about? Because honestly, Uriah and myself don't have a ton of experience with orphan strategy. And I thought, what better way to do that than bring on the expert himself, Tommy Blair, co-host of the Super Flex Super Show. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Man, what an awesome intro. I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for the invite.
Oh boy, man. I tried to channel some John Hogue there for sure. That's what that was. So I appreciate that.
Making me look bad.
No, no way, man. No way. I mean, honestly, you and I were talking a little bit before we hopped on, and I was telling you how I do listen to the Superflex Super Show. Anybody who creates content knows that it's pretty tough to listen to content when you create it. So when I listen to content, I want to make sure it's worth it. So you guys do such a great job. When I was listening to you, you brought up this orphan strategy and I was a little taken aback. Like I honestly, like, not to overstate it, but it felt a little like groundbreaking to me. I was like, I haven't heard anybody be this thoughtful about orphan strategy. And we get questions in our Discord all the time. Hey, what would you do with this orphan, with that orphan? And I don't, you know, listening to you, I thought, okay, we probably don't think about this enough. So I wanted to dig into kind of your history and kind of how you approach taking over an orphan. So just getting into it, we don't need to go crazy with it, but, you know, how long have you been playing Dynasty, and was your first experience taking over an orphan, or did you get into it traditionally?
Yeah, great question. I've been playing since 2020. I was one of the pandemic folks, but I've been playing redraft since the late 90s. And so I just thought, like, there's nothing going on. Good time to jump into a Dynasty League with some friends. So I did 3 startups, and I took over a few orphans as well because I wanted to get the full experience. And I'm so glad that I did, because I found out that I actually enjoy taking over orphans way more than doing startups. I do fine in the startup. Like, I'm fairly successful, but there's something that really speaks to me about taking over an orphan, and I'm excited to talk about it today.
Okay, very cool. I know I've taken over one orphan and it went okay. I turned it around pretty well in like the first year up to, I think, like top 3 or 4 in the league. But when I go into it in general, I'm like, I know that I just kind of want to make it my own. I want to make it kind of, you know, what I view as a dynasty roster. And I think, you know, I probably approach that from the startup draft perspective. So I don't know if that was necessarily the right way to go about it. In your opinion, what's kind of like the most important factor to take into consideration when you're going to take over an orphan or considering taking over an orphan?
Yeah, I think you need to explore this in different phases, right? So initially, when I'm looking at assets, I love having a few sustainable assets. And what I mean by that is a couple players that I feel pretty good about for at least a year or two. I'm thinking like a Dak Prescott type profile, somebody who has reliable production. I don't need to make a move in a couple years, I don't think. I can slot them into my QB1 or QB2 spot and like away we go. You don't get a lot of those when you're adopting orphans. You usually get assets either you're unfamiliar with, you don't have high rostership of. And instead of looking at that as a negative, I would encourage folks to think of it as a positive. It gives you more access to the trade market within your portfolio that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And it gives you more experience. It makes you a more savvy trader because you have to think more critically about how you're designing rosters. You made a really great point about when you take over an orphan, it's not necessarily the assets that you'd want to pick up. And I think that's fine. Like, I think it makes you a more creative and dynamic person when you're faced with different experiences.
Yeah, that's a super interesting approach. And we're going to actually look at a live roster in a little bit here.
Yeah.
And go over some, and, you know, kind of apply your strategy, which I think is going to be a really good way to kind of educate the audience on kind of what you do. But what's the first step for you when you take over an orphan? I know, you know, it's funny. I know it's super unique. And when I was asking you on, I kind of knew that I wanted to get you to look at a roster and I wanted to send you some information. So I kind of knew what you were looking for, but let our audience know a little bit kind of what your first step is taking over an orphan.
Absolutely. And so just for folks who are watching, there's going to be some visual component to this. If you're listening, no problem. You can either catch the recording, I'm assuming,
yes,
or we can just sort of lead you along in the conversation. So you're not missing out too much. But what I've got are several tools, right? So I'm a data-driven person. I'm an energy manager professionally, and I use a lot of data that you can see on my screen right now. And what I'm looking at when I jump into a league is first and foremost, what my opponents look like. I want to know where they're weak and strong in their processes, what strategies they're employing. That way I can best understand how to sort of fit in the value game, in the production game, and how I can leverage inefficiencies against different managers.
This is super interesting. So yeah, I mean, can you explain a little bit more about kind of what we're looking at here and what you put together? Because you've basically taken the MFL league that I sent you and you've put it into a spreadsheet here.
Beautiful.
And it's amazing looking, but what is it doing for you exactly?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to dig through this. We're probably going to talk more in depth about this league in just a little bit. But what I've done is I've pulled down this crazy league that you sent me with 36 different teams and all these copies. And I mean, it's kind of a wild league. And I've tried to, I don't know, take a look at how different managers are operating on a fundamental sense. Whenever I look at a league at first glance, I look at the transaction logs, right? I want to know ads drops. I want to know waivers, what trades are completed, how active managers are, and what the effects were of those actions. If I've actually adopted the orphan, you get this great glimpse into this ecosystem where you see trade offers as well. And that's incredibly powerful because you know what people are trying to accomplish by the offers that they're sending the previous manager. Do not hesitate to use that against folks. I didn't have that, unfortunately, for this exercise. But I think that's fine. I think that it's good to just look at all of the moves that actually happened and dig in later to the moves that potentially could have happened. So what you can see right now on the screen is all these different managers. I think there's 36 of them. Mm-hmm. And the activity that they had, right? And I've sort of compiled it into these different buckets here. And I've tried to find correlation. Does it matter if you are one of the most transacting teams? Does it matter if you're the person that trades the most or the least or somewhere in the middle? What about your waiver ads and drops? What correlates? And unfortunately, in this league, there's very little correlation, which is very unconventional.
You typically find correlation? I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I don't know if we have time to dig into the data to this minutia if you want to. I'm going to let you steer the conversation here. But we're looking essentially at the R squared, right? The most transacting team in this league did almost 100 transactions last year, and they drove their team to the bottom. What that tells me is that if you want to tank, if you want to attempt to get the 101 in this league, there is a path to doing it. However, by doing that, you would assume that there would be reverberations throughout the rest of the league, right? You're pushing competing assets to other people. And so folks who are making contending trades theoretically would have more wins. That's not the case in this league. I found that really fascinating. So the most transactions led to a 101 pick. Great. Doing contending transactions left you nowhere but the middle. And so having more trades is not necessarily indicative of having a better record in this league. Now, why is that? This is a three copy league, right?
Yes.
So explain, I think we should just put some ground rules down real quick. Let's explain the context of this league.
Absolutely. That's a great point. So this league has actually been around for 7 years now, which is a long time for a dynasty league. It is a 36 team, three copy, super flex, tight end premium, 1.5 tight end premium dynasty league. It's a start 10, and you actually only have to start one of each position. So just one quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, and then all flex and one super flex. And so with the three copy thing and the 36 teams, the way I view it and the way I've always viewed it and talked about it on this podcast is essentially three 12 team leagues in one. That's the way it really operates throughout the regular season is each division. There's three divisions and it's console wars. So Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo. It's very fun. Each division just plays each other throughout the year. And then there's a kind of an all play playoff essentially of the teams that make it to the playoffs. I think four from each division make it. So yeah. I think that kind of lays the groundwork for what the league is. The only other stipulation I should say is with the three copies, only one copy can be owned by any one team. So you can't have two Breece Hall shares on one team. You can have two Breece Halls in one division. You can trade them across division. It doesn't matter, but there's no weird thing like having multiple players on one team. There's just three copies because there are 36 teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And it leads to really interesting dynamics. You mentioned that it feels like three 12 team leagues. I think from a point scoring perspective, that's absolutely true. Have you found that from a market perspective, from a trading perspective, that it acts differently than three 12 team leagues?
It really just acts as crazy as it sounds. It like if you take your three dynasty leagues that you're in and notice that the market value and activity is a little bit different from each of the three leagues as you'd expect. Well, now you combine all those people with their different trade values and strategies all in one. You have 35 very, very different people to trade with. And, I don't think it really makes any one division stand out. Like, I don't think Nintendo trades more probably than Xbox or vice versa. Not that I've seen, but it just creates and adds like the dynamic of, you know, three of your craziest leagues all in one.
Yeah. And it does operate differently in my opinion. And I mean, one of the main things that I notice, and you can try to work to get ahead of this at different times with when, you know, rookie classes come in and new players are added, but you can set the market on certain players or positions depending on when you get in. But like if one player hasn't been traded for a long time and there's been a market shift, right? You know, even talk about CJ Stroud recently with the big market shift. Whoever trades CJ Stroud first has now set the market on what CJ Stroud's value is in this league because there's two other copies that can be traded. And yeah, sure, maybe somebody else values them differently, but now you've seen a trade go down and that's the price you're working with or working from, right? So there is an advantage to either getting ahead, really getting ahead of that most of the time is what I've seen. But that is a big difference is that, you know, one trade can shift values, you know, across copies essentially. But yeah, it definitely does not act the same as a normal league. There's way more trades that happen and there's cycles that happen during certain times of the year that lots of trades happen. So yeah.
Here's a couple of things that I thought of, and I was curious about your thoughts because I don't play in this league or anything like this league. I speak of the concept of gravity, of exerting influence by cornering certain positional markets, let's say. We talked last week on the Superflex Super Show about a 10-team tight end premium Superflex league. And we were building our rosters with two elite quarterbacks and trying to get five elite tight ends. Doing that type of strategy where you're cornering a market, where you're trying to essentially squeeze out your league mates of certain positional advantages to compound your own, that doesn't feel necessarily possible in this three copy format. Because let's say I have Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, TJ Hockenson, Dalton Kincaid. Well, there's two other Dalton Kincaids out there that you can get, right? Yes. And then you're just matching me. Have you noticed that dynamic in your leagues?
Yeah. I mean, in this league specifically, for sure. And then you run up against where you're going to face your opponent potentially in the playoffs or the finals who have the same players as you. So like you're saying, the advantage the advantages become much more fringe. So you're looking for these really specific and minute advantages that show themselves, but not often. Like it's really hard, I think, to find the edges in this kind of league, right? Which is kind of what you're getting at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple other thoughts there. Let's say you want to trade for CJ Stroud. You're a believer. You think that this is going to be a quarterback one overall season. Are you more inclined to trade for CJ Stroud from folks still in this broader league, but not within your division? Is it something where you're more willing to push value out towards the other leagues?
That's super interesting. I honestly don't know if I've considered that as much.
No.
because like I think most of the time the way I approach it is trying to control my own destiny more than trying to exert my force on others, especially in a bigger league like this. But what's funny about you saying that is I literally traded for CJ Stroud in this league like 3 weeks ago or whatever. And I believe it was, I'm trying to think, I think it was out of my division, and I traded some pretty good assets. Like I think London's and Higgins were in there. So those are definitely things that I probably should be considering. But I don't think I have that much.
Here's what I would encourage is to take a humble approach. Mm-hmm. Understand that you're wrong. If you're a fantastic trader, you're wrong 40% of the time and you're right 60. Like that is a huge win.
And I feel that in reality too, by the way.
Yeah. So here's the thing, like understand that you could be wrong and you could lose big on these large trades. Right. And so if you're trading for a significant asset, first try to trade for the copies outside of your own division. If you're in a multiple copy league, because if you're wrong, that force is not exerted on you. You're ruining somebody else's league and you're keeping your asset cluster within your division relatively sparse. It lessens the impacts of bad trades.
That's a great point.
I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that idea. I love the kind of out of the box thinking that you kind of bring to your approach. And I think when you're taking over orphans, and I mean, I've heard you on the Superflex Super Show saying that 90% of your leagues are orphans, you kind of have to take mm-hmm. a different approach, right? You can't just go into it like everybody else. So I really enjoy that aspect of it. And I want you to kind of dig into that aspect of it with this next piece here, which is, I heard you say that you have this 20 trade threshold that you're trying to hit when you take over an orphan. So we don't need to stick with this league because we are going to get into it more. So, you know, it can be any general league that you're going to get into. What is the idea of this like 20 trade threshold that you're trying to hit when you first take over an orphan?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And this is an experiential thing, right? Like I have found in my leagues, once I hit 20 trades, after I've adopted an orphan, the team looks generally like what I want it to. So there is no like hard and fast thing. It's just something I've noticed and I feel needs to be shared. So what am I looking at? When I adopt an orphan, first and foremost, I am looking at the top 16 to 20 assets. We're talking about Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Jefferson, like the really, really good players. And I'm inquiring, what is it going to take to get these guys? I'm actually making offers. I'm actually soliciting feedback. So many folks feel like they're unobtainable assets. You don't know in a new league until you try. This is fertile ground. They have not traded with you before. They don't understand the dynamic of what it is to work with an aggressive trader who's willing to pay up, who's not going to lowball. If you really believe in Sam Laporta, like go get him with an orphan. It is easier to do that in a new league than in an existing league, because in an existing league that you've been in for a while, everyone kind of knows all your tricks, right? This is an opportunity to sort of dust off some old ones and to try some new ones out. So that's the first thing I'm doing, right? The second thing I'm doing is I'm pushing from the middle to liquidate. I want to liquidate because I want to re-access those elite assets. I want to take away some of the risk, because we know that in a dynasty startup, what is it, about the fourth round, where the players you're picking, they're not as solid as you might think they are. If you look at 2022, 2023 startup ADP, and you get down to the fourth, fifth round, a lot of those players have lost a ton of value or have underproduced, right? So it's a great opportunity to just get out of those players, and you're probably not going to like those players anyway, because it's an orphan. It's not the team that you would have built. And so it's an opportunity to reconstruct your roster, to move value into those stable assets that I was talking about at the beginning of this conversation. For me, the most repeatable producing assets are the top six quarterbacks, as well as the very elite tight ends. It's repeatable production. We know what we're going to get from those assets, and they usually age very gracefully. A 33-year-old elite tight end looks a lot like a 31-year-old elite tight end, right?
Yep.
So just take the production, enjoy it. You know, if Travis Kelce retires next year and he's on your roster, what have you paid? I've acquired him for the 112 in Superflex leagues, and I think that's a really good value in a Superflex tight end premium league. You know, anything over 1.5, I feel like I've taken all of the production that you can expect out of a 112 and pushed it into this 1 year. That's a blessing. That's not something that should be shunned. You should be seeking those outcomes out.
See, I love this. The deceptive approach really speaks to me. And I don't think you're doing it in like a malicious way necessarily or anything like that, but you're learning your league mates and you're trying to learn the league and you have an advantage of them not knowing you and you're trying to exert that advantage, obviously. And that really speaks to me. And it makes a lot of sense that, I guess, in your experience, getting to that 20 trade threshold is how you get to the point where you're rebuilding the team in the vision that you want. Now, it sounds like you're tearing the team down almost every time. Is that kind of the approach necessarily? Or because like you're talking about liquidating. So does your team become, you know, just a few elite assets and some picks? Or I guess this gets to my question really, which is, are you trying to get to a specific build or are you simply trading for what you feel is like the best value?
Both, really. Imagine you're at a grocery store, mm-hmm. right? And you see cheese sticks are buy two, get three free, right? You don't need five packs of cheese sticks, do you? Like nobody
yes.
needs.
Yes, you do.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. It's that way across the board in consumerism, in capitalism. What happens every December? We get commercials with gigantic bows on Lexuses, right? The December to Remember event. Buy your spouse a car or an expensive piece of jewelry. The spouse doesn't actually want this stuff, but they have it, right? So what I like to do is look through transaction logs of completed trades and try to figure out what my opponents were trying to get and what they got on top as an adder, because they probably don't want those things. It's the extra packs of cheese sticks, right? Like, okay. And so I want to harvest those. Yeah. Like, I like to use the middle of my roster to harvest cheese sticks.
Okay. I dig it. So you're definitely going for the top tier assets though. When you get into a league, your first goal is like, let me learn these people, which honestly is something that we all should take from Tommy here seriously, like even myself. In the leagues that I feel like I know, I'm probably going to do a lot more research on my own league mates just through the transaction history and just kind of how he's built it out. I'm a data analyst by trade too. I should probably be able to do kind of what you're doing with the sheets and everything. Nice. And I like that approach. I think it makes a lot of sense trying to build a process around it. So I really dig that. All right. So I've heard you talk a little bit about the QBXXX strategy. If anybody's listened to John Hogue and the Superflex Super Show, they know about his QBX strategy, the QB Extreme strategy, taking it to a next level here with Tommy, where he's basically saying, I want all the elite quarterbacks. Do you find that, which I think is a really, really heady strategy, because if you can acquire that much value on your team, you can do a lot of things in your league. So do you find that that's a viable strategy across leagues? Or, I mean, you're taking over Orphans. Like, do you find it's possible to do when you go into a new league?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. First and foremost, every strategy is a viable strategy. Strategy is a tool. Data analytics is a tool. It's how you wield the tools, how you use the tools to build something that matters. We call it arms race on the Superflex Super Show, collecting the top five quarterbacks. What this does for the folks who haven't heard of it, no worries if you haven't, by collecting the top five quarterbacks, what you're doing is you're compounding the effects of Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts, insert, you know, whoever your favorite elite producing quarterback is. It compounds the points per game advantage that you get, because what you're doing is you're limiting your opponent's ability to match that production at their own quarterback one and super flex position. You can gain something like 14 points per game by collecting the top five quarterbacks if your opponent has quarterback 6 and 7, which they almost never do in this type of scenario. And you can do the same thing at tight end as well. Those are the two positions right now where it really works pretty well. Is this a viable strategy with orphans? I've only done this with orphans. So yes, absolutely. I think it's easier with orphans because people don't know what you're trying to do. In a startup, it becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly because quarterbacks go off the board. I mean, there's, gosh, probably what, 12 quarterbacks in the top 18 mm-hmm. picks, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty
it's crazy. So I can't get up there in a startup draft, but I can certainly maneuver around in an existing league where folks aren't entirely sure what it is I'm trying to accomplish. What this does as well, when you have an orphan and you push all of your value into one position, it opens up a lot of spots in your roster. And so you can fill the back end of your roster with what I call frictionless value. It costs you nothing to acquire this upside, even if it's low upside. It doesn't cost you anything. And so you've opened yourself up to positive variance. You've created pure production and value insulation at the quarterback position or the tight end position. And what you've done is you've given yourself an opportunity to hit on Kyren Williams or Craig Reynolds or whoever RB3 interests you for that moment who could fall into a starting job. It works a little bit less well at wide receiver, but I had 100% exposure to DeMario Douglas last year just because he was out there. Nobody really wanted him. And I picked him up, you know, the week that he got back healthy, and I was able to flip him for seconds or into producing wide receivers who are a little bit older. So having that extra space should be worth something to you. I credit every single roster space as a second round value. Whether or not the player sitting in that spot has that value, it's up to me to find my way into it. But I want to value every roster spot as its own commodity.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. I could take it in a million directions, I feel like. But it's, you know, thinking about, I've listened to a lot of people, and I've listened to you talk about how like you don't value, you're just talking about this, the wide receivers as much at the top, obviously, because you can replace that production. And it makes a lot more sense to me when you're filling it in with elite production at QB and tight end, and you're basically building advantages there for yourself on a week-to-week basis as well. I think that if you want to approach it that way where you're devaluing wide receivers, you kind of have to place extra value like you're doing on having multiple elite quarterbacks and or tight ends or both, really.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, though. My most rostered wide receiver is AJ Brown because I picked him up really, when he was still in Tennessee. He had that dip in production. He was wide receiver 3. He dipped down to like wide receiver 15 or 16. I got a bunch of him. Right now, I'm buying up Justin Jefferson. It's not that I don't like wide receivers. I don't like having a lot of wide receivers. I will buy the dips on the elite guys, and I try not to be fooled by the false signals of good, not great wide receivers like DJ Moore. He had a wide receiver 6 season. I think he's a really good wide receiver, right? Like, I don't want to shit on him, but he's not Ja'Marr Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. He has proven not to be Amon-Ra St. Brown. And so I am going to value them in wildly different tiers. I will pay 140% of the cost for Amon-Ra St. Brown, but I will only pay 70% for DJ Moore. That's how I end up with so few wide receivers.
That makes a lot of sense. And you're also, I assume, willing to, if you take over an orphan and you have a DJ Moore, you're probably going to find a way to move off of him to somebody who values them more than you do, right?
Yeah. And that's the whole problem with the wide receiver position, in my opinion, is wide receiver 17 to 40, they look a lot alike. And it's really touchdown variance that springs a wide receiver 24 into wide receiver 11 for a year. I know I can't guess that. I don't think the market can either. And so I'm not going to pick between them. I'm going to try to tether to production profiles that are most likely to hit in the top 16 wide receivers, because that's a very firm threshold of production. I mean, historically, all the way back to like 2002, you look at it, you aggregate it, and it's like, well, this is my threshold. If that's what historically happens, this is where I need to land, is in this top 16 wide receivers. It doesn't have to be any harder than that. Just lean on precedent.
I love that. I do. Okay. So I think we've really dug into kind of the basics of your strategy, how you're going to approach it when you first take over an orphan, what you're going to do, what you're looking at. So let's apply it a little bit here. We were talking about our console war dynasty league, so we don't need to necessarily get into the settings too much again, but it is a super flex tight end premium league. It's a 3-copy 36 team league. I'm going to pop open right here. This is our one orphan. We filled all the other ones. For some reason, somebody isn't willing to take on this tragic orphan. So look, you know, while we're doing this, we're also looking for for a new manager. So if anybody wants this, please reach out. That said, here's our roster here. And real quick, we also have all the picks for this year and next year. And this is, I should explain this, I guess, the rookie draft is 36 teams. So when you're looking at these, you just divide the pick by three, essentially. So this is like the 107-ish, depending on how it falls. So it's in that range.
Can I sweeten the pot a little bit?
Absolutely. Billy? Please, please.
Whoever takes this team on, I will give them the resources we're talking about today. I will tell them how I would approach this discreetly. We're going to give a lot of the secrets away today, but we're not going to give all of them away.
I love that. I love that. Okay. So yeah, if you take this over, Tommy's going to hop in your DMs and he's going to give you some resources and tools to absolutely smash this league when you do take it over. And I think this team has a lot of opportunity. Now, it's not the best team, don't get me wrong, but you have, you know, Justin mm-hmm. Herbert in here. I think you got a CMC, Kyren Williams, you know, Keenan Allen, Mike Evans, a lot of possibilities to liquidate like we're talking about. So I threw you the transaction history for this league as well. So I think you may have been able to dig in a little bit. Tell us how you'd approach this orphan.
Yeah. First, I wouldn't adopt this orphan. This doesn't meet.
Wow. Ringing yeah. endorsement. Oh my goodness.
I got to be honest, you know?
No, of course. No. I love it.
This isn't a team that I would adopt for a couple reasons. One, I don't like the copy component. It doesn't speak to me personally, but I think it does for a lot of people. I like exerting influence on others. I like to be devious, and I think I'm limited in my capacity to affect others in this format. But there's a format for everybody. And if this is for you, like, there are decent bones here. I think this is a very fragile team. I think that it is set up to compete. If I'm looking at this team, I see it as about a 7-win team with normal injury luck. Looking at the starting requirements, I love the format itself of having all of these different flexes because it's a choose your own adventure, right? Having a start one, the way I approach this, I'm going to assume I'm going to start two quarterbacks every single week. The tight end premium isn't enough to push me to abandon that strategy. However, like having the flexibility of all of these different flexes is really intriguing to me. Excuse me. If it's okay with you, I would like to share my screen right now and show how I'm approaching the team. And for those of you who are listening who don't see what it is that I've got pulled up, I've got a spreadsheet. And what it's doing is it's calculating the wins over replacement at each starting spot. It's taking into account typical injury attrition for every single position to build an expected wins and losses, right? And so it has some positive variance outcomes. It has some negative variance outcomes. It gives you your all play, your backup AWARP. That's how I approach this. It's like, let's dig into the data and see what a median outcome looks like for this team, right? So quarterback one, we're kind of holding serve. Justin Herbert is a decent quarterback one. I am not buying necessarily that it's all doom and gloom for the Chargers. And expert consensus rankings over on Fantasy Pros agrees with me. I try to remove my own biases because if I'm rostering players, it's probably because I'm higher than the market on them, right? And so I use things like the expert consensus rankings to marry with historic production data. And that's what I'm doing here. So Justin Herbert sort of holds serve as a contending quarterback one. We've got a huge problem, though, at our quarterback two spot with Daniel Jones and Ryan Tannehill and a couple backups. And so I see like negative half a win or so at this QB2 spot. Like, this is a huge problem for me. Like, the fragility of quarterback at this roster is significant. If we lose Justin Herbert for 4 weeks, this team is sunk, right? Despite whatever else is happening on the roster. Would y'all agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no chance.
Yeah.
No chance. Yep. And so we dig into running back and the RB1 overall, probably in most folks' mind, Christian McCaffrey. Great. However, again, like, I don't love anchoring my entire team on one running back. And so while there is a really great ceiling outcome, which you should pursue in a three-copy league where the top four teams move on into this, I'm not sure how the playoffs shake out, but like into this essentially elite pool of teams, you want to have the highest possible range of outcomes, and Christian McCaffrey certainly gives you that. So while a great contending piece, it turns my stomach a little bit that he is such a critical value sink of this roster. What do you guys think of Christian McCaffrey on this team?
I'd be moving him.
For what?
this does not look like a team that's going to compete this year. And with Christian McCaffrey being at a position that is hyper fragile, I believe that someone who is more positioned to truly contend this year would be likely to acquire him and take on that that opportunity, as you will. This particular team, I'd be getting rid of Christian McCaffrey.
I mean, I'd be looking to move him in. Like, how can I turn Christian McCaffrey into a quarterback? That would be my goal, right? Like, you have the top piece at a position, and you have a really fragile, you know, spot at your QB2. How can I turn that top piece that Uriah just, I agree with him, you're not going to use this year, and like you're saying, is super fragile. How can I move him to maybe a contender who has an extra quarterback? And it might not be the top end quarterback, but can I get a quarterback plus for Christian McCaffrey? What can I, you know, there's got to be opportunity there.
Yep. And with multiple copies, I think there is an opportunity. However, I want to put a pin in not contending this year. That was my first inclination as well. However, we need to take into account other factors. Let's keep cruising through this roster. We've got Kyren Williams. Draft capital does not support future production. However, he looked really good. And so it's like a, do you know ball or do you believe in analytics, darling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We know ball around here. We like Kyren.
TBD there. Like, I like the asset, Kyren Williams. He's certainly going to sit in one of our flexes, probably our first flex, and offer about a win over replacement. Derrick Henry's there too. He might get 20 touchdowns. He might be out week two. Like, that's the risk you take with Derrick Henry at age 30 or 31, whatever he is. Good opportunity, though. If you're seeking elite outcomes, I don't mind this on a contending roster. The question is this a contending roster?
I don't think it is, because in this format without, excuse me, without the quarterback too, I think you're going to really struggle to kind of make up the production without any viable quarterback too. Like you're talking about, the teams that make it to the playoffs are damn good teams, right? Like, mm-hmm. these are not slouches, and they usually are kind of like this, a super team of sorts. So this is just not going to get it done for me. And there are pieces on here that you would want on a contending roster. So I do think that it could kind of fool you. For me, like, that's how I would view it. I'd like, is this team fooling me into thinking I can like churn really quickly into contending again this year? I would say no, but I think I'm a little more risk averse, and that's why I think that way.
I think it's a fair position to take. I don't think you're wrong there. However, we do have optionality, and I don't want to remove it in April. I think that we want to consider all possible outcomes. Moving down the running back position, there's guys like Chuba Hubbard, Miles Sanders, Dante Foreman. Like, there are streamable pieces, and in a format where there are so many different flexes, I really like the back end of this running back room, because nobody likes these running backs. I love them.
Why do you like them so much? What makes you feel so comfortable having that kind of roster build?
Because right now we're looking at our rosters absent injuries, absent overproduction, underperformance, weird, nonsensical coaching choices. I am open to positive outcomes with Miles Sanders. He has done it in the past. While he is a low hit rate, at his market value, he's a much higher hit rate than his peers. And so I love having those types of players. Antonio Gibson is another one. Like,
sure.
These are players that if they hit huge. If they don't hit, they don't cost you anything. And they're already on my roster, so I don't even have to pay anything for them. Nobody's going to trade for a Miles Sanders right now. He is a valueless roster clogger in most people's opinion. For me, he's a streamable option because I have a shallow team with this orphan. I don't have a lot of depth. And so there will be a week very likely where Antonio Gibson, Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard are starting, not in the fifth flex spot, but probably in the second. Moving on to wide receiver, though, Mike Evans, he's old. We've given up on him I don't know how many times. We were ready.
I made that mistake.
Fool me once.
Yeah. I mean, again, what are we going to get in value versus production at this point in the year? Moving him to me right now, like, I don't know. I'm willing to hold him for the next few months. I don't know what I can gain or lose by moving him. I'd certainly explore it, but absent somebody posting a message or a trade bait or something in the Discord saying like, hey, I need wide receivers, I'm looking to make my push, there's no market right now for a Mike Evans that I want to pursue or that I've seen in other trades.
Looking at all three of these guys, they're probably all the same in terms of wanting to hold right now, right? Because their situations, like Mike Evans, are probably just going to be good and better than what his value is now. But then Keenan Allen and McLaurin, things can change for them with Caleb Williams and incoming quarterback for Washington.
Absolutely. I'm expecting a bump, a temporary bump with both of those players. Yep. And I think that would be an opportunity to move either Terry McLaurin or Keenan Allen come May. However, I'm comfortable having them on my roster until we make a decision about this orphan. At tight end, I don't feel great, y'all.
No. I was wondering how you were going to fix this problem.
we got Mr. Schultz and nothing else of note. And so that feels like, again, a real problem to me. He's about holding serve at the tight end position for like a replacement starter somewhere in tight end 12 to 18. I don't know. I don't feel very confident in this. However, at value, Dalton Schultz, for the production you can get, he's not a bad value, I guess. Do you guys have any strong thoughts about him?
You know, I love him because he was a Cowboy. He did get a contract, so like his certainty of length in the league right now is pretty good, which I guess, you know, is a good thing. But if that's the first thing that comes to mind about why I like the guy, then we have a problem.
Totally.
I mean, I think we liked him a lot more before Diggs got there. You know, I think we were like, oh, he got signed and everything was fine. And now that Diggs is there, we're more uncertain. So yeah, it's not great, but it's more specific to this roster. Like, I wouldn't hate Dalton Schultz on a certain roster, but this one where I'm not competing and also need to get rid of assets or want to turn into something greater, mm-hmm. he's a hard sell. So it's a tough asset to work with, I think.
All right. Enough shitting on Dalton Schultz. Let's turn our attention to the league in general. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm making assumptions here, and I think I've got this right. Top four teams move on to the playoffs, where they face teams from other divisions, correct? Okay. So the threshold is top four, or you want to be really, really close to the bottom here. Being in the middle in this large a format is not something I want to do. And so I feel like a decision needs to be made. Looking at the league as a whole, our 12-team version of this league, flying uppercuts, Dolphins Make Me Cry, Sackboy Runners, and Tomb Raiders of Vegas are really the strongest teams based on, you know, I hate using the word my model, but like based on the spreadsheet that I have in front of me that I've created, they're the most likely. They're the most likely to be in the top four. However, like right behind those top four are two or three teams, Final Fantasy VII, Lenny's Late Night Lineup, and this orphan team, right? It's buoyed by CMC. Yeah. It's buoyed by CMC and like a decent set of flexes. Like we're holding serve at these flexes. Where we're lacking is really at tight end and quarterback too. And so this is a decision point, I think, for the three of us. Like we could address quarterback too fairly cheaply and try to push for a playoff spot, knowing that we have a lot of really strong contending pieces. If we remain open to positive variance and health, we could be a playoff team. And if we make the playoffs, our roster is going to look very different from everyone else's who made the playoffs. This is multiple copies. You don't want to have the same assets as the other playoff contenders. And so I think there is some positivity to having this shitty orphan because it looks different than every other contender.
I love that. I love the definition of the orphan as we're giving it positive affirmation. No, I mean, this is an incredibly unique way to look at it. And I love that you kind of found the light at the end of the tunnel with this team, right? Like you really did. And so I guess my question really would be, because we didn't talk about the picks, right? We didn't talk about the 107, essentially the 107, 207, 307, 407 that they do have. So yeah. I'm assuming that may play into how you would approach fixing some of the positions of need in QB2 and tight end. So like, is that, excuse me, is that how you would go about doing it? Would you maybe move that 107 for court? Like, I guess, how are you thinking about adjusting to a win now team with this roster?
Yeah, it's certainly an inflection point. And I wanted to get your feedback on this because I think it's a decision that we can collectively make. That's really the path forward. If we want to remain open to the possibility of contending, knowing we can sell off these assets come week 4 or 5, if this isn't working out, other managers, there are 35 other managers, they're going to want CMC, at least 5 or 6 of them. Like, you've broadened your range of trade partners by having these multiple copies. I think that we could potentially, the three of us, try to find either a tight end or a quarterback two, thinking like quarterback 18 overall, like that's all we need to push this into a contender. I want to lean on your expertise because you're in this league. Like, tell me, is this something where quarterback twos are moving frequently? Are quarterback ones moving frequently, in your opinion? Are you getting offers for these types of assets?
Yeah, I mean, quarterbacks move pretty frequently, like, in my mm-hmm. opinion, right, Uriah? Like, I think they move around. There's no problem in this league. If you want to acquire one, you can go get one. So you're convincing me a little bit into, because my first inclination as we were walking, or as we were going through it, obviously, was this team needs to be kind of torn down a little bit. A lot of pieces that are fragile win now assets. Totally. But I guess this team is kind of in that win now mode. So you are convincing me a little bit to think about the way I would initially approach it would be like, all right, I have this 107 that's kind of on the edge of being, you know, it's a tier break right there. It could be a JJ McCarthy, you know, maybe you luck into a Brock Bowers if he falls in this format or something like that. Yeah. But, you know, those are still pretty fragile assets that aren't going to either win you the league this year or necessarily get you where you need to be going forward. So can I maybe combine the 107 with something and either simply get a QB2 that's probably a damn good QB2 if I combine something with that 107? Or can I, like, my other inclination would be like, how can I turn, again, CMC into more like a more youthful roster somehow? And that would be maybe, again, collecting a QB2 plus maybe another pick or something like that along the way. I'm not sure how that would go exactly and what CMC's value is, you know, in the off season, but that's my first inclination. That's how I approach it.
Yeah, I feel like if we're willing to give up, since we're so stacked at running back with CMC, I'm not sure what that mm-hmm. looks like after we lose CMC. But I see a world where you could easily turn CMC and fix both those positions. Mm-hmm. I think you could upgrade your quarterback too and your tight end by moving that one single asset. Something like a Matt Stafford and an Njoku, or a Matt Stafford and a Jake mm-hmm. Ferguson. You know,
you're probably getting more plus on that too.
And you're probably going to get a little bit more plus on that. And it's, yeah, you're losing CMC, but if you're looking at this as your QB2 being the problem and your tight end being the problem, which they absolutely are, I think that's a way you could fix both those positions with just that one asset.
I get that. Here's my contention. CMC is worth about 2 wins over replacement in this format. If we move into a strong QB2 using CMC as the primary trade asset, two other contenders, Final Fantasy VII and Sackboy Runners, both have a really strong QB2. And so we would struggle against other contending teams in this division. We would be losing wins over replacement by moving CMC into QB2 with that adder, but we would be getting a little bit more stability in our value portfolio on this roster. So I think we would lose more games and push us a little further out of contention if we were to move CMC. Is there any other way that you guys see that we could get a QB2 and keep CMC?
Yeah, there's definitely ways. Like, again, I was talking about the 107, but mm-hmm. there's also like a Kyren Williams, because he's obviously not going to be offering the same wins over replacement. Or just go to the age, you know, just wait until maybe, you know, Mike Evans, or you can get something from Mike Evans and Keenan Allen. Like, that probably is the best way to go, because you're going to be able to replace those points easier on the wide receiver side. So I think, now that I'm kind of just thinking about it, Tommy probably agrees with me that liquidating those wide receivers may be the best way to get the extra production you need for QB2, and while you're keeping the value above replacement or wins above replacement with CMC.
You know, I think you're right. I think shifting some of the wide receiver value and some of the draft equity either into quarterback two or tight end one differentiates us. Because let's shift the conversation to tight end just for a second before we think about what type of offer we might make. Two other contenders, the Dolphins Make Me Cry and the Flying Uppercuts, have a distinct advantage at tight end. However, they're the two favorites in this division. We're not really competing with them, are we? We're competing with the next two teams, Sackboy Runners and Tomb Raiders of Vegas, who really aren't doing a whole lot at the tight end position. And so that I would contend we could almost do better by moving into tight end one, because how many tight ends do you guys have that are elite producers in your mind that we could rely on for the next several years? Probably like 8, right?
And that's being generous, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would be more inclined to move into tight end and try to find my way into QB2 some point in the mid, I don't know, week 7 or 8 part of the season, assuming variance went my way. I think that tight end is the way that we can gain an advantage with this orphan, and we can really press against the 3rd, 4th, and 5th best teams in this division to differentiate ourselves.
I just want to stop here. I love the way that you're doing this, seriously. Like, because also visually, you're making it really easy for yourself to identify kind of where you can take advantage mm-hmm. of positions within your division here, because we're talking about this league specifically. But this goes back to something like really basic that I talk about a lot, but effort and commitment, like the amount of effort that you're putting into this. And that should never be taken as a negative. Like, we spend a lot of time on our teams. We have 20, 30 teams, whatever it is. Like, you should put effort and commitment into this because you want to be good at it and you're spending a lot of time on it. But like, very few people in your league are doing this work. And that's giving you a significant advantage. And I would implore people to try to exercise even like an ounce of this effort. Seriously, because like, I'm just looking at this and I know that for myself, like when I go back and do this, it's going to help me out a lot. But I know that if people do this in this league, it would give them a huge advantage over their league mates in being like, yo, like Tomb Raiders of Vegas, like that's my buddy. Like, he's a good friend of mine. He can look at this and be like, I just need to get a tight end and I can exert a lot more force on my division, man. Like, and so there's a lot of advantage to what you're doing here. And I want to give you a lot of credit for that. This is great, great work, man. I love this.
I really appreciate it, man. Yeah. It's not hard once you start to get in the flow of these types of things and dig into the information. You don't have to be a data nerd either. Like, lean on whatever your experience is. Like, mine is energy management, so this makes sense to me. However, like, maybe botany is yours, right? There's certainly examples in botany that you can draw from, and you could dominate your league by, you know, knowing different flowers. I don't know botany.
You don't have to make everybody feel. You don't have to make everybody feel better, man. What you do is great, and what you do obviously in your day to day translates really well to this. I mean, I like to think what I do does as well. But if you can take what you do regularly and translate it to this, it's going to help you a lot because it's what you know, and that's obviously what you've done here. So absolutely awesome stuff.
Let's make this actionable, though. I want to like look at our league. Obviously, there are other copies out there, and you should explore those copies first and foremost per our previous discussion. However, Lord of the Rings Gollum, The Last of Us, we see a tight end advantage on losing teams, right? Between half and three quarters of a win over replacement. I think we should target those tight ends, or we should target Midgard Gods of War, their quarterback too.
You heard that, Ben? We're coming for you, brother.
Yeah, I don't know who these assets are. Like, I don't know the names. We're going to pull them up in a second. But the data suggests to us that those are the assets we should pursue, especially if we were only in a 12-team league, right?
No, that's great, because of course they're going to be willing to sell those assets. So yeah, these are the teams you should be targeting to acquire the needed assets. I love it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it real quick, if you guys don't mind. Like, let's see Lord of the Rings Gollum.
You have the rosters?
I got them, yeah.
Look at this guy. Mm-hmm. So well prepared. Are you kidding me? This is a professional right here for sure.
Oh, how about that? It's Trey McBride, TJ Hawkinson, George Kittle. He's got a bunch of them. Now, here's the thing. I'm guessing this manager got into these tight ends because they believe in tight end premium. They believe in having an advantage at tight end. And it doesn't always work out if somebody has a glut that they want to trade them away. However, one of those things is not like the other. George Kittle is much older, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, that would be the guy I would target, the 29, 30-year-old tight end, which, again, they age very gracefully.
You don't got to tell me twice. I've been Billy's buying George Kittle everywhere. So, yeah, I totally agree with this take, actually. I think this is somebody who a team like this would be willing to move off of, obviously, because they're also probably in the mindset of rebuilding a little bit as well, getting off of some age.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see some other aged assets. Nick Chubb, whether or not you believe in embracing that injury risk, he's got awesome quarterbacks. He's got Patrick Mahomes and Trevor Lawrence. Let's just help this guy along on his rebuild, right? Let's find a way into Marquise Brown and George Kittle. Would you guys trade the 107? We had the 107?
Yes.
Would you trade the 107 for those two and some small future pick consideration?
Yeah,
definitely. I could definitely be swayed to do that for sure. And yeah, especially if I'm getting a couple picks back as well. Yeah, that seems like a great deal. And to do exactly what we're talking about, right, is help both the depth at your wide receiver position, knowing that you're probably going to want to liquidate some of that as well.
Exactly. And nothing crazy. I mean, I'd be fine with like a third back. Don't try to ream the other managers who are just trying to do their own strategies, you know?
Totally, totally. No, no. Listen, we want to be deceptive around here. We're trying to gain the advantages, but obviously we're not trying to screw anybody over. It nothing ever works that way. Trust me. I've heard enough about it on Twitter recently that you need to be cordial in your trade discussions. So
yeah,
we're on the same page.
All right, let's explore The Last of Us. They've got a tight end. Let's see who they've got. The apple of my eye, my sweetheart, Mr. Mark Andrews himself. Are y'all in on Mark Andrews?
This is why we
like number one. Yeah,
this is why we get along clearly, Tommy. It's the tight end love, bro. Yeah, no, Mark Andrews is my tight end one in Dynasty. Has been for a couple of years now. Big fan. Big fan.
Yeah. And another tight end right behind him is Pat Freiermuth. So we're not robbing the cupboard bare either. Like, we're leaving this other manager with a possible high upside tight end. They may be inclined to move on from Mark Andrews here. It feels like this team is not ready. And look at that quarterback two, quarterback three. We've got Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. If we wanted to fix our quarterback two spot and our tight end spot in one fell swoop, I think Last of Us is the manager we need to work with, don't you?
He's a tough cookie. I know The Last of Us, but you can't get.
I don't know.
You can totally get. I'm just bringing a little bit more context to the league. I think it's worth it, but I do agree that you can get something done here. But I think the way you'd have to do it would definitely be leveraging the 107 again. You're going to have to include that and say, you know, 107 probably plus something to acquire Mark Andrews and a QB2 there. I don't hate it. I do think that that's a great way to do this.
Okay. I think that there's an option there. I think that's where the negotiations begin at the tight end position. Let's just real briefly visit Midgard Gods of War and look at their QB2. Let's just see what they've got going on over there.
Let's see.
Oh man, this is going to be a tough get. So they've got Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Will Levis. I see investment in the quarterback position here. I think that's going to be a challenge because whoever has Kyler Murray right now probably invested low on him. And so I don't know if this is going to be a good get. I think that it's worth an offer, but I don't feel optimistic about getting a deal done. However, I don't know Gods of War. Do y'all?
This is the co-commissioner of this league with me.
Yeah. Nice. And I think that's, you know, speaking to what you're talking about earlier, just being taken over orphans, like you have the advantage of not knowing anything about the player. So like Billy and I would look at this even with this data and be still kind of hesitant to approach these two particular players just because we have 7 years worth of history. So that is something about taking an orphan that kind of gets overlooked.
It's also they haven't rejected 500 of my offers either. You know, they don't know that I'm this kind of trader. And so they're willing to extend me a bit more grace as well. So leverage that opportunity. But here's my point, y'all, is I think if I were to take over this orphan, I would want to lean into seeing how it worked out for the first quarter of the season, because the trade market is going to be shit for the assets that I own. I mean, let's be honest, like, what am I going to get for Mike Evans, Terry McLaurin? What am I going to get for Daniel Jones, Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry? Those are players that we're probably not going to be able to trade anyway for a few months. So let's just embrace that. Let's try to push some of these other managers in the direction of a rebuild. Let's clear out some space for ourselves to become that fourth best team. We're not aiming at the top two. This team is not going to be in the top two of this division, even if everything breaks right. That's okay. All we have to do is be in the top four, and then our team is going to look different enough from everybody else in the playoffs where we've got the puncher's chance. Even if you're a huge underdog in the playoffs, that usually means like you've got a 40% chance to win a head-to-head matchup, right?
Pretty much. Anything could happen. You just got to get to the dance.
Yep. I think this team can get there. I don't like it. I have great odds, but I think it can get there, and I don't think that should be discounted, right?
Absolutely.
Quarterback, tight end, we feel pretty good about possibly waiting through the first quarter of the season. And we think that like the trades are probably going to be more fruitful anyway at that point for us with the assets that we have. And if things are going really well, capitalize on it. Like this manager who had the orphan, they have Kyren Williams. Like they've embraced this in the past. I don't know how it worked out for them. However, if we get another set of positive outcomes, this team can be very good. Right now, it's just okay.
All right. Well, while we're on Billy, I'll go ahead and handle our Discord. We've been asking ever since we announced that you'd be on. A lot of positive feedback and interest in talking to the Orphan King himself. So we have a couple questions from the Discord here. The first one is, do you prefer to take over a more stacked Orphan team and pay more, such as an MFL where the good teams have premium, or would you rather adopt an Orphan team at a discount, which has less assets, again, such on MFL where that is an option? I think this comes from where, if you look at like safe leagues, a lot of times if you're bidding on safe leagues that are orphans, a lot of times the stack teams are, say it's a $50 league, but you actually have to pay 70 because it has, I don't know, the 101 Patrick Mahomes versus another team that you might be able to get for 20 bucks, even though it is a $50 league. Which would you prefer?
I think what you need to build into the roster of the cheaper league is an additional very high first round pick, right? The time value of your own first round pick, assuming you still have it, should be accounted for. If I'm only paying $20 for a $50 league, I've been given an extra year and a half of runway to do what I need to do. That's worth something to me. If I'm paying $70 in a $50 league, a lot of the work has already been done. I've somehow been able to corner the market without even being present on certain assets that are obviously valuable, and there is less opportunity to better myself. It comes down to who you are as a manager. Are you somebody who wants to go out and win the damn thing? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with paying the extra $20. I wouldn't recommend doing it every single time, but if you see a set of assets that you really like that you don't have, you know, in that iteration, like, go for it. I think that's great. I'm more inclined to take on the $20 league because I will add a 102 or a 103 in value to it. That's meaningful to me. I also know that my strength is in trading, and I will turn that roster in the next year and a half, take care of that time value, and say like, I can do better with my $20 than I could with my 70.
That is a great answer. And I love how you put time into money, which it is, right? So your $50 league is for 12 months. Every 12 months, you got to pay another $50. Totally. Whereas you're getting 12 months worth of rostership for less than half the price. It really give you a lot of flexibility there.
And yeah, I'm not going to take on a trash roster just because it's 20 bucks though, too.
Well, yeah, obviously. Well, I might.
That's fair.
All right. Next question from our Discord is, you might touch on this, but yeah, do you take more risks with orphans than you would with your homegrown dynasty?
You almost have to. If you take on an orphan, there's usually a few super teams, and that makes sense, right? Like there's some form of inequity. And so you have to be more aggressive. That doesn't mean you have to take more risk. It means that you have to offer more trades. You have to construct a more brittle roster. You have to be leaner at the positions that don't matter, and heavier at the positions that suffer more injury attrition or can be traded for more moving forward. Like, I'm not rostering a bunch of backup tight ends or tight end 30s. Like, they don't matter. Same with wide receiver. I love Tyler Boyd, the football player. I don't love Tyler Boyd, the fantasy asset. There's no reason for me to roster him on a good or bad team. However, like a third string running back, yeah, they turn into mm-hmm. Keaton Mitchell all the time, don't they?
Yep.
Like I need to be more aggressive in seeking those outcomes. And so I think being more risk-taking can almost have a different lens than the traditional sense.
Let's hop into, what do you do now? What do you do this time of year? Everything's leading up to the NFL draft, which I'm sure we're all pretty excited about. I mean, especially if you're playing Dynasty, like you have to have like some like inclination to enjoying the NFL draft. What is your process for rookie drafts? Once you've successfully executed your strategy to build up an orphan, how do you approach the rookies this time of year? Do you do your own evals? What exactly do you do?
It's such a great question because there's so many different ways that you can take this, right? So really thoughtful. I appreciate the listener asking. I think that there's different ways with different picks that I'm approaching the NFL and rookie draft. If I've taken on an orphan and I've rebuilt it in the likeness that I would prefer, it typically has 4 or 5 elite quarterbacks. It typically has 2 elite tight ends. I've probably only got a handful of wide receivers and a bunch of really horrible running backs, maybe with 1 good one, hopefully, or even like a Najee Harris. And so when I'm looking at that, it's like,
too soon. Yeah.
Take the ugly running backs. He's a beautiful man, just an ugly fantasy running back. What I'm doing is I'm trying to find ways to move into future capital because I know if I've got a stranglehold on quarterback, then I can leverage that. I can trade my Joe Burrow for your Justin Herbert plus a first in season if Herbert gets hurt, right? I'm using that as my savings bond almost to trade away healthy quarterbacks into injured quarterbacks with a plus. It only works if I've also got a slight stranglehold on future capital. I've found that getting out in front of it now helps me leverage future draft picks moving forward because other folks can't rebuild if they don't have their first, right? They're stuck in this purgatory and they become apathetic. I really like it when managers don't log on when I have 5 elite quarterbacks. It might not be good for the league in season, but it's really, really good for me. And so when those managers aren't on and somebody's quarterback gets hurt, they go to the quarterback store, which is Tommy's team.
All right. So do you do any of your own rookie evaluation or do you rely on data, film, or other people? And either answer is perfectly fine.
Yeah. I watch every single NFL game in season. I watch 0 college football. I listen to the rookie Hootenanny. I listen to really smart people break down players. But I think that there's almost a fallacy that more information is good. There's diminishing returns to the point where we try to outsmart draft capital, which is more than 50% of the equation. And so what I try to do is understand where the market is at, not for my own decision-making, but so that I can leverage other people's decision-making against them. I want to know why Ladd McConkey is getting steamed up right now. I think he's probably good, but I don't need to make that bet because somebody else is willing to. And I'm willing to charge them a small tax to allow them to have that full experience. And if he hits, I'll overpay for him in 9 months, you know, like that's fine.
I love that approach. I do like the idea of like, if you're not going to do the evaluations to not make it such an important piece of your process in general, because like, it's not going to do much for, like you said, there's diminishing returns at the end of the day. So the best thing you can do is be informed on where the market's at. So I think that's a very, very viable strategy to approach rookie drafts. Like that might be one of the best ways to approach it, to be honest. If you're not well versed in kind of the evaluation process
even
in general,
even if you are,
it's a great point because it just following the market is going to definitely lead you to a better place. That's for sure. So
it goes with all profiles. Like I don't assume that I am right. I am working against others' assumptions that they are right. Like that is a bigger edge than picking the right players. Just let other people pick wrong.
And they do. And we all do.
We all do, yeah. I certainly do.
Yeah. It's like Peter Howard says, if you just fade, you know, all the incoming rookies, like you'll be more right than anybody else.
That's probably true, yeah.
That was the last of the questions we had for you. I have one like really near and dear important one. Sleeper or MFL?
MFL for me. Not because it's better, but it's where my first league was, and I'm not going on two platforms. I've got 36 or 37 now. Like, when they all move, I will move. What about y'all?
I'm old school. I still I got so used to MFL. We converted most of our listener leagues to Sleeper this year, so I'm still kind of sleeper dumb. I prefer MFL still, but yeah.
I think MFL offers a lot more, like you can dig into so much more in terms of like transactions and all that kind of stuff. So I think that it offers probably a lot more for the committed manager, but Sleeper is so much more accessible. And that's why we moved our leagues over, because we were trying to access more people and make sure everybody could do their thing. So I do get like the usability portion of it is not great, but yeah, I think if you want the most information and the most out of your league, like MFL probably offers the most. It just sucks because their business model, I think, is kind of trash.
I was just thinking to myself, all the extra work that you do for your leagues with spreadsheets and tracking transaction history, like I don't even think that's to the level that you're doing it. I don't even think that's possible with Sleeper.
And it's difficult however you do it. There's so many great tools, though. I do want to plug like the tools that have been developed from industry experts get you 99% of where I'm at. I just found a method that works for me. So please don't feel like you have to reinvent the wheel or be a data analyst to be able to look at your leagues in a data-driven way. Like go to Dynasty Daddy, go to Dynasty Nerds. Like there's so many of them. I shouldn't even name those because there's others that are just as good.
Yeah. We try to promote the free 50 content on here all the time. There's just so much out there.
Totally.
If you're willing to use it.
What you're doing reminded me a lot of Dynasty Daddy, Tommy. Like the stuff you're doing with the spreadsheets, it reminded me a lot of Dynasty Daddy. I was like, wow, this is like your customized Dynasty Daddy. So I think that's a good shout.
I made it in 2020. I don't know when Dynasty Daddy came out, but like I needed a tool that worked for me. So I just like drank a bunch of coffee and did it.
Was there anything that either Billy you want to ask Tommy before he leaves, or anything Tommy you want to add before getting out of here?
Just appreciate Tommy coming on and taking the time away from all the solicitations he's getting for his orphan strategies.
Yeah.
I just really appreciate him coming on. He does great work on the Superflex Super Show with John Hogue. So definitely go give them a listen, give them a follow. And hopefully we can have him back on here sometime to talk other stuff other than just orphan strategy.
Yeah. I really appreciate y'all having me on. Like this was serendipitous and I'm nothing but grateful because I'm not anybody. I think a lot about orphans and that really, I don't know, struck a chord with some people. And so I'm grateful to be able to talk with you.
All right. As usual, go ahead, follow us on the Twitter box, Dynasty Underdog at Willie B. Moon, FF at Tommy, at FF Tommy B. The Superflex Super Show. It's one that I hardly ever miss. Very, very good. And if you want to, you can follow a little of me at Uriah Dawkins. Have a good night, folks.
Dogs in the yard, might need a guard. Every loss, taken to heart. Me first, that cannot be. Must be these underdog episodes, see? Feeling much better, so suddenly. Under the moniker, Monica G. Crafted at night, while all of them sleep. I won't look a fool, taking this tool. Defeating the opposition around me. No, no, I'm not sorry. Yes, I'm taking this knowledge imparted. Just barking, no harm, don't be startled. Yes, I'm taking the title, and it's so vital. Thanks for the ride, I'll never be idle. Turn up the dial, it's about to get wild. And the points gon' pile up. That is the underdog fight. Down, up at the day and the night now. Easy as flying a kite now. Come take a look at it right now. Dynasty underdog bite.